This is the Coast 89.7 Weekly News Magazine, Dialogue, highlighting local news stories and events in our Cape Breton communities.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Dialogue on the Coast 89.7. I'm Dave Wilson. This week, the Heartland Tour makes its Cape Breton stop next month. Some tips on what you can and cannot take on your next flight. And on The Good Sentence with Paul McDougall, visual artist Gary LeDrew. That's all coming up on Dialogue on the Coast 89.7. The Heartland Tour is making a stop in Cape Breton next month, and organizers are urging people to register early and come out and get some exercise. Elaine Swartz from Cox Heath is one of the tour volunteers.
Well, the Heartland Tour is a public awareness and engagement campaign presented annually by the Cardiac Cycling Society of Nova Scotia in partnership with Heart and Stroke Foundation. And it's a tour of a group of us, not so professional athletes, but retired or healthcare professionals that get on a bus. We go from one end of the province to the other. And we stop at each community, and each community leadership owns that event for that day. It starts in Halifax, goes to Yarmouth, Annapolis Royal, New Glasgow, Anakinish, and we are arriving in Sydney on July 8th. Our venue is going to be at Member 2 Sport and Wellness Center, you know, the spot in Member 2 where the two arenas are and the walking track. And this event is open to all ages, all levels of activity are there. It's not just about cycling. If you don't have a bike, bring your sneakers, register online for free. And when you do register for free, when you arrive, you will receive a t-shirt with Heartland Tour in the front and a message on the back. And that is probably what our motive here is that we want to get the message to all Nova Scotians that moderate physical activity, 150 minutes a week, is better. No substitutions for this prescription. Lifetime guarantee that you'll have a longer and healthier life, greater energy. So it's the 150 minutes a week. This is the message we're trying to get through. So that's about 30 minutes a day. And you could break that 30 minutes up into 10-minute
intervals or what have you.
And what are some examples? It could be walking. It could be running. It could be learning how to bike. It could be swimming. It could be just about anything. But to just try to be conscious of, like at the end of the day, if you say, you know what, I really could have done more, well, we'll please do more. The paradigm is shifting now, and even our family physicians and educators, healthcare educators, are now looking at the options of encouraging people to exercise this 150 minutes a week prior to writing prescriptions for medications. It's also improves your mental health. It improves your physical health. It improves how you view the people, your family, and the environment around you. We're beginning to look at this as probably one of the biggest breakthroughs as far as trying to turn the paradigm for healthcare. So we're trying to explain to people that we, as Cape Bretoners, we have a beautiful island, beautiful people, and that's why I'm still here. But we also have the highest rate of cancer and heart disease in Nova Scotia. And of course, Nova Scotia is number one in the country for heart disease. And to us, we know that we can prevent some of these statistics if we just start moving more and enjoy each other. Another thing, too, besides 150 minutes of exercise a week is we find that we don't want people to become lonely. We want us to still rely on our families. We want some support, community support, communionship with your friends, family members, and we find that this is also very beneficial for your health. Okay. We also want to make a point of just talking about Canada's food guide. It's very balanced now.
Yes, and, it's there's a new one out. So
the new one out, and it was originally, it's almost back to the basics, really. It's back to eating with family, eating slowly, eating mindfully, and trying to eat foods that are probably closest to the ground, more or less. So
yeah, I noticed more,
not as processed.
And more emphasis on things like legumes and things such as that.
Plant protein.
Less meat.
Yeah. But I don't want to deter anybody from eating their fish, because fish is extremely beneficial for the body. And I mean, I'm not a dietitian by any means. I am a registered nurse and a health educator. But my heart and my passion is with this Heartland Tour. I really do think they've made a tremendous stride in. They started 14 years ago. And
okay, it's been around that long.
Yeah, membership would be if you'd get a few elite cyclers and physicians and what from each community, and they'd get on a bike and they'd go, you know, there'd be about 10 or 12 of them. And last year we had 1,500 registrants, official registrants across the province. And that's not just for cycling, of course. That's for walks. It's for little runs. It's for, and this is also an event where we can get the children and their families to come as a unit and bring their bikes. If they don't have bikes, again, it's a sneakers, and we have lots of fun. There's lots of activities there.
Well, let's run down some of the activities. This is on July 8th. Monday, July 8th, Member 2 Sport and Wellness Center. Things start at 8:15 in the morning. We have a schedule here.
Yeah, at 8:15, that's a check-in and registration. So if you did not register online, and that would be heartlandtour.ca, free registration. This is not a fundraiser. And if you go in there, you would see that there's different categories and different age groups and different abilities. So you just go online and register. So when you arrive, your registration is already there, and you just sign your name in. We give you a free T-shirt. We stamp your hand, you get a free Subway lunch when you're finished your activity, and you can see what's happening. Alongside of this event, another thing that happens with us is that we take medical students from Dalhousie Medical School, and there's six of them. They're setting up a research, and this year the research, several years ago, like 2 years ago, it was fatty liver in comparison to physical activity and chances of developing cardiovascular disease. This year is type 2 diabetes and its relevance to cardiovascular disease and its relevance to 150 minutes of physical activity. So if you want to come in and get your hemoglobin A1C checked, and you want to speak to the medical students there, just on the side, you might want to convince them to move to Cape Breton when they're finished their degree. But other than that, they're lovely young adults, and there's six of them. And the research is type 2 diabetes relative to physical activity and cardiovascular disease.
Okay, so that's another part of the event. I see there's a couple of road rides that are going to be taking place on the day as well. 63 kilometers. That's a good long one.
That is a long one. That is around the Myra River. And, you know, it looks like a lot to somebody that isn't, that doesn't cycle. I remember the first accomplishment I ever had on my bike. I did 10K.
Yes.
And I thought I was totally all in, and I thought, oh my gosh, this is amazing. I was so proud of myself. So that is for advanced or intermediate cyclers. The 41K going out at the same time as well through police escort. It's going around the Myra River. That one's for the average cycler. Those are the ones that will probably get a lot of Velo Cape Breton cyclers. And that would be the one that I would choose, because that's my average cycle route. But we're over the edge now. We don't expect everybody to do what we're doing. So the youth registration is at 10 a.m. And this is where you're going to see a few busloads of youth coming in. Youth centers right from Waukaba, right to Whitney Pier. Youth will be coming in. And what we do, we register all the children. And there's like a little hockey tournament there. And there's games. And there's also Learn to Bike program through CBRM is also going to be there. And then at 10:30, we have the 6 kilometer trail ride on a bike. So this is for people that have a hybrid bike or a trail bike, and they don't want to ride on the road. And they think, you know what, maybe it's kind of the in-between exercise. Lots of fun. We're only going to be on the Green Link Trail here, so there's not going to be any danger of running into traffic there.
So maybe better for somebody starting out biking.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely, yes. And then at 11 a.m. is the 3-kilometer walk, and that's guided through the Green Link Trail. So as you can see, the Member 2 Sport and Wellness Center is a perfect venue for this, just in case it's rainy or overcast. We also have the walking track above and around the rink.
So now, things can move inside if need be.
Yes, and I don't know if people realize, but that walking track at the Member 2 Arena is free. So, and it's corked floorings, and there's an elevator there for those who have limited mobility. So if you have a walker or wheelchair, that's okay. Mm. We're there. You can get, and once you register, you can go up and do your 1 kilometer around the top, come down, get your t-shirt, get your stamp, have a nice lunch, get some research done, meet the medical students, probably get your hemoglobin A1C checked, and enjoy speaking to some of the physicians that founded this program. And that is Nick and Carmen Giacomantonio. One is cardiologist, Nick is cardiologist, yep. And Carmen is a cancer surgeon. Both of them were brought up on Lingan Road in Whitney Pier, and both of them are just tremendous personalities for this program.
Great, yeah.
And at lunch, there's going to be, like the Subway sandwiches, we have refreshments along right throughout the morning, some fresh fruit and whatnot, and then at about 12:45, I guess, we're going to tie things up with a closing ceremony, and then we're going to draw for prizes.
Oh.
So we have, this year in Cape Breton, we have 6 bikes to give out.
Oh, really?
All different age, mostly children and youth.
Yeah.
Hopefully it's the children that would need the bike that stay around for the draw. We give out gift certificates for free sneakers and lots of prizes, lots of free helmets. And, so if you don't want to stay for the prizes, that's fine. There's even going to be some prizes given out, the Trails of Cape Breton, the book.
Okay.
So those are going to be freebies as well. So,
another good way to get some exercise, go do some hiking.
That's right. And some people wonder where the money is coming from to put this on, because it is a free registration and it's a free T-shirt.
There are a number of sponsors.
Yeah. And this is most of our funds come from big corporations, Doctors Nova Scotia, Nova Scotia Health and Wellness. So we've got a lot of backup for this. It's not going away. We're going to continue until we get the average age higher in as far as people that are suffering from heart disease. It used to be in their 70s and 80s, but now we're looking at people in their 50s.
Oh my.
So our underlying message out there is that we've got to get people between age 35 and 50 changing their lifestyle. And we've got to get them out with their children, and we've got to use the family instead of waiting until you're in your 60s or 70s and then developing something where it would be much more difficult to make those lifestyle changes. So anybody between age 35 and 50, unfortunately in Sydney it's on a Monday and it's July 8th. So if you're off on vacation or if you're able to come at all.
Chances people will be.
That's right. That's right. So go to heartlandtour.ca online, or you can register there.
Summer is the season many people take a plane somewhere, but before you get on that plane, you and your luggage have to be screened. Christine Langlois is a spokesperson with the Canadian Air Transport Security Authority, or CATSA. Dialogue's Bobby Knox spoke to her to get some tips on what you can and cannot take on your next flight.
So CATSA is the Canadian Air Transport Security Authority. We're mandated to look for potential threat to civil aviation. So the part of our mandate that the people will see the most at the airport is when they come at the checkpoint, the security checkpoint, and they have to go through before to get on the plane. So we are responsible of scanning passengers and their belongings.
Okay, so they're the people when you're boarding, you go through the X-ray machine and these are the people checking your carry-on luggage and that sort of thing. This is CATSA.
Exactly. So we look at carry-on luggages. We also look at checked luggage.
Okay, and you operate across the country, including at the McCurdy Sydney Airport.
Absolutely. So we're responsible. There are 89 designated airports across the country where CADSA is present. Yeah, absolutely, for screening passengers and their belongings. So I'm here today to help people prepare. The idea is to come to the checkpoint, prepare. It goes faster for you. It's easier for the travelers, and it's easier on everybody. So one way to prepare and to know exactly what you can bring with you in carry-on or checked luggage is to download the CADSA app. It's available on both iPhone and Android. And then it gives you a sense of what you can bring or not. So there's a place where you can enter the name of the item you're planning to travel with, and it's going to tell you, does it goes in carry-on, checked luggage, are there any restriction, exemption? So it's going to give you that. So if you type breeze through security, you'll find our app easily. An example of that, for example, if you type milk in it, it's going to tell you right away that it's a liquid, therefore it's limited to 100 millimeters or less containers in carry-on. If you have more than that, it's okay. It has to be checked. However, there's an exception for young children. So if you're traveling with a child 2 years or younger, then you're allowed to bring more. So you have to show it at the checkpoint, but then you're allowed to go with it.
Okay, so... And I can imagine there's quite a list of things that people might be wondering about when they're traveling, what they can or cannot take. But you have a little bit of show and tell for us here. I guess for the radio, it's hear and tell. But these tell me about these items we have in front of us here.
Let's describe it. So we do have some liquids and gels, because the regulation in liquid is not only liquids, it's liquids, aerosol, and gels. So one container we have here, it's a mason jar of homemade raspberry jam. And unfortunately, this was too big for carry-on. So it's half a liter, so it's too big. It could have traveled, but in checked luggage. Keep in mind that most items can travel, really, with a few exceptions, but most items can travel. It's a question of knowing where to place them. So unfortunately, this jam had to stay at the checkpoint.
Now, and this is, I'm sorry to interrupt, but this was something that was... I guess surrendered is the word here in Sydney?
Absolutely. All these items here were surrendered in Sydney. Keep in mind that if ever, despite your efforts of preparation with the app, for example, you come at the checkpoint, let's say, and you still have one item that cannot travel with you, keep in mind that you do have options. So you can, for example, if you parked at the airport, you can go back and place the item in your car or leave it with somebody who drove you at the airport. Or at the Sydney airport, there are some small lockers. So it's not very big, but for example, if you would have a valuable knife that you really want to keep, maybe you place it there. So the idea is that the passengers remain in control of their items. In some cases, they will choose to surrender because they want to go fast, but we don't, CADSA doesn't confiscate items. We don't have that power. So that's something to keep in mind, that you do have options if ever you find yourself at the checkpoint with an item.
So unfortunately, the person who had this homemade raspberry jam either, you know, was in a hurry or what have you, they opted to surrender it.
Exactly. So the ideal, again, is to prepare and to know exactly where each item goes. So, for example, we have here cat litter for some people traveling with cats. That can be useful. But this is inorganic powder. This is part of that large category. We also have a large container of salt here. It's almost a kilogram. This is too large to go in carry-on luggage. It's part of the regulation on inorganic powder. So inorganic powders are limited to the size of a soda can in carry-on, so roughly 350 millimeters. If you have more than that, it's okay. You can bring it with you, but you have to place it in your checked luggage. This applies to sand and rocks from Cape Breton. They are part of that category of inorganic powders, and many people here want to take either a souvenir from Sydney or bring a piece of Cape Breton with them when they travel. So that's something that we see often at the Sydney airport.
So if you have more than a pop can full, it has to go in your checked luggage.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay, good to know.
Yeah, and one example of one item that doesn't fly is fuel. So this, we have here a propane can. It's going to be more common as the camping season is starting. So keep in mind that fuel doesn't fly, even in checked luggage. And same thing for stoves, for example, camping stoves. If there are traces of fuel in it, it won't fly even in checked luggage. So be careful, either you clean it very thoroughly or you find another way to bring your stove, your camping stove. But fuel is something that doesn't fly easily for obvious reasons.
Right, okay. Flammable, obviously.
Yeah, exactly. So we also have rules about blades and knives.
Right.
So the rule, you're allowed to have a small knife with you on planes in Canada. It has to be, the blade has to be 6 centimeters or less. So small scissors, for example, small knives, small, even multi-tools sometimes can be very small. If it's smaller than 6 centimeters, you're good to go in Canada. It doesn't fly in the U.S.
Okay.
But if you have larger knives, let's say cooking knives, hunting knives, you can take them with you. However, they have to be in your check luggage.
Okay, not on carry-on.
No, absolutely. And one thing that we want to remind people is about cannabis. So the rules changed this year recently because of legalization, obviously. So now it's allowed to travel domestically in Canada with up to 30 grams of recreational cannabis. 30 grams would look like roughly the size of a clear sandwich bag, plastic sandwich bag, depending, obviously, how it's packaged. But really, it's roughly the size of a sandwich bag for 30 grams. You're allowed also to have up to 150 grams if it is medical, but you have to have your medical documentation with you. One really important thing to keep in mind, though, is that it remains illegal to cross international borders with cannabis. Whether you come in Canada or you go out, even if you go from one location where cannabis is allowed to another one, the example we give often would be Vancouver and Seattle if you travel on the West Coast, for example. It's allowed in both locations. However, you still cannot cross an international border with cannabis.
Hmm. Okay, well, that's good to know. So, and that that baggie full of cannabis, that can go in your carry-on luggage as well?
Absolutely, carry-on or check, it's your choice. And there's no specific way of packaging it because it's an allowed item now. So allowed items, we don't have any requirement in terms of packaging.
And just getting back, because I know a lot of people these days, I've done it myself, because airlines are now charging for checked luggage. They take, everything comes as a carry-on. But again, any kind of, I think if I remember correctly, when I flew, like shaving cream, I think contact lens solution, I had to buy that, when I landed because the containers were too big to take in my carry-on luggage.
Yeah, so sometimes they have smaller containers. Most drugstores will sell you small containers. But if you have to take more, yes. There's one exemption. If it is medication, if you need it, medication will be exempted whether you have a prescription or not. So you have to show it at the checkpoint. Let's say you have cough syrup, for example. You show it at the checkpoint, and there's going to be a quick analysis, but then you can go with it.
Okay, so some exceptions, that, as you say, for medical. If it's medicine, there are exceptions. So lots of things to know. It's complicated.
There are many different rules. So the main one would be on liquids and gels. Keep in mind that it has to be 100 milliliters or less containers, and they have to fit all together in a 1 liter clear plastic bag for your carry-on. If you have more, it goes in checked. Inorganic powder is the other one that we want people to remember, roughly the size of a soda can for inorganic powder such as sand or salt in your carry-on. If you have more, it has to be checked. And look at the app. It's really a good way to prepare. Enter the name of the item you're planning to bring in. It's going to tell you right away if there's any restriction, exemption, or if it goes in checked or carry-on. If ever the app doesn't give you the information you're looking for, you can also contact us on Facebook, Twitter, or on the phone, and ask us a question. Sometimes when people travel with a very unusual item, they will send a picture of the item with a short description, and then it helps us help them to decide where it should go.
Are there any unusual items that stand out for you? Have you heard of any ones that are kind of, quite unique?
Well, I saw different things. For example, I remember seeing once a pair of scissors that the blade was more than a foot long. So that was unusual, and obviously it didn't pass in carry-on. The person surrendered it. So we have some unusual items for sure. One thing that people want to bring very often is food. The general rule about food is solid food does travel, liquidy or gel doesn't. So peanut butter would be part of the gel regulation, for example, Nutella. So large containers of that type of substance have to go in your check luggage. But for example, a pie or a turkey would travel in carry-on, depending, obviously, of the size of your carry-on, because the airlines might at some point say it's too much. So you have to check with your airlines in terms of quantity. But really, the general rule is that solid food would travel.
And what about how soon people should arrive at the airport when they travel? Are there, is there any advice or regulations, or guidelines, I guess, on that?
So one thing, it depends on the airports, so it depends of the traffic, of the hour of the day. We do have another app. You get the wait time in real time in 14 Canadian airports, so the larger ones. It doesn't include Sydney, but it does include Halifax. So let's say you would be to start from Halifax. It gives you a sense of how long you should be at the airport before to enter the checkpoint. Keep in mind, though, that it's only the security process, right? There are many other steps when you go to the airport. So I would highly recommend that you look at the website from your local airport, and there's going to be recommendations. One way to go faster is to check in online before to get to the airport with your airline, so that speeds things up as well. So there are different things that you can do, but look at the website of your airport, and it's going to give you a sense of how long. There's going to be recommendations on it.
Yeah, I think the Sydney airport has that too. I think I've noticed in the past. So.
Yeah, or airlines sometimes have recommendations as well. So, yeah, you should definitely check. But give yourself plenty of time. The worst that can happen is that you start your vacation earlier, but it's much more relaxing that way.
Exactly. Well, thank you very much for all the advice today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Time now for the Good Sentence with Paul McDougall. This week, Paul speaks with visual artist Gary Ledroux about his new Charlotte Street Gallery and his time back in the 70s running a bar in Toronto that was frequented by a lot of great Canadian musicians.
Why don't we start off talking about how a gentleman who's 77 decides he's going to start up, open a art gallery on Charlotte Street in Sydney. How and why did that happen?
Well, last year I was at St. Patrick's Market behind the St. Patrick's Church, and I joined about a dozen craft people there. And the cruise ships in the fall, I did fantastic. I sold a lot of my art, and I was really encouraged by that. So I thought, well, I'm a veteran, and I ended up getting some money from Veteran Affairs. And, you know, I'm 77, so it's sort of my last kick at life to do something exciting, so I opened up an art gallery on Charlotte Street. I think now it might be the stupidest thing I've ever done, but nevertheless, we're going to give it a go.
I think it's too soon to call it the stupidest idea. It's been open how long now? Just a few weeks?
And I really, it isn't even everything's settled yet and so forth. You know, there's maps and tourist maps and all that sort of thing to do. So.
This is in the building that used to be
Cape Breton Fudge.
The Cape Breton Fudge, which moved basically across the street a little
bit. To Rascals, yeah. They're opening up Rita McNeil's tea room is going to move there.
Yeah, that's right. So that's kind of exciting. They're moving and sort of expanding. And now we've got another art gallery. You know, we've got the Center for Craft and Design is across the street there. And but a lot of people over the years have always said that, you know, if you want to make your try to get your downtowns a little more vibrant or funky or, you know, get tourists going. You need to have things for them to go in and poke around in and see and maybe buy some stuff. And art galleries are often, you see them in smaller cities.
It certainly had a lot to do with it. I mean, you just see the cruise ship passengers walking up and down the street with absolutely nothing to do. And Cape Breton's exciting. We have a lot of really, really good artists and craft people. It's I'm hoping for the best.
That's right. So you've got a couple of artists in there already with you.
Right.
But you had some bad news about one just recently.
Yes, J. Bell Redbird is absolutely one of Canada's leading Aboriginal artists, died yesterday, and I have some of his things in my gallery. I've known Jay since he was about 5 years old, and it's very, very sad. Bad timing. He's a young man, scarcely 50.
I was in your shop last week and looking at that stuff and wondering who he was in that, and then and you were telling me about him, and then you get this news.
Yeah,
heart probably.
Yes, Alain Morissette, who's like the number one artist in Canada, actually taught Jay how to paint.
Is that right? You know,
Yeah.
So anyway, aside from that, which is kind of sad, you have some of Jay's work in there, and that's reason enough for people probably to.
He does beautiful work.
Yeah, that's right. So you have the shop, And since it's still new, you're open for other people to come see you about possibly showing stuff there.
There's an art meeting tonight that's held by the curator of CBU at the Angel.
Oh yeah, Holy Angels.
Holy Angel,
yes.
And I'm going to it because it's really to introduce myself to more artists and so forth and be on top of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So now, why don't you talk a little bit about your art and what you do? Because you've been an artist for it appears to be most of your life, but you're into a new kind of a phase of what it is you're doing, and you can see it, of course, in your gallery, on your website. Things like that. But tell us a little bit about it.
Well, I've always been sort of on the fringe and on the outside. But again, I came from Lewisburg originally. I even lived on Lewisburg Lighthouse for 3 years when I was a little kid. And then we moved to Ontario, and I grew up in Uxbridge, Ontario. Both my parents were artists, so I had all the tools available to me from a very young age. And I've always sort of been doing it, even in public school and high school, I was the guy who did the Santa Claus parade drawings and making stuff like that. And over the years, I've had shows, and I was on the Toronto art scene for quite a while. I have friends with like Harold Town, Robert Markle, Graham Coftree, Gord Rayner, all the big guys of the 70s, And I had a few shows here and there. I worked on some art projects for Expo 67 even and things like that. And I had a few shows in Uxbridge. And if you go to Uxbridge, almost every bank, doctor's office, and insurance company has got one of my oil paintings hanging there, which is nice. And I'm well into my 70s. I don't paint quite so much as I used to do. I really make a lot of prints because I have a lot of original work to work from.
Mm-hmm. So, Uxbridge, it's a small town, right?
Well, it used to be.
Yeah, it's gotten bigger, hasn't it?
Well, yeah, we used to laugh. It was 6,220 for 20 years because every time somebody got pregnant, somebody left town.
Yeah,
so, the usual thing.
Yeah.
But now it's a bedroom community, of course, of Toronto, and 30, 40,000. When they put in I actually made up my mind to move to Cape Breton when they put in the third traffic light. That's enough. I'm going.
Yeah, the town is too big for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you moved back here. When did you move back to Cape Breton?
14 years ago.
Okay. And back to Lewisburg.
Yep. Yeah. I started in Lewisburg. Right?
Yeah. So did you buy a home there? Or?
Yeah, I did. I had all that. Unfortunately, I lost it, which that's a whole other story.
Right.
Spilt milk. Don't care. I went to seniors there, and because I have a dog, I had they moved me to Sydney, and so I'm in the only place in seniors in Sydney that I have a dog.
That and your dog is what's his name?
Peanut.
Peanut, right? Yeah, aptly named.
Yep.
Yeah. So, the art scene is that's part of your life. You've also done a lot of sailing because you're never seen around Sydney without your. Well, it looks to be your captain's hat.
I've got a picture of me of 13 in Miami wearing one of these hats.
Is that right?
Yeah, it's been my trademark for quite some time. Yeah, I lived one of those lives. I never had any plans. I just rolled from one thing to another. I ended up as a computer executive for 10 years. I used to deliver racing sailboats. And for 5 years, I was like the most famous bootlegger in Toronto. I had the after-hours club that everybody went to. And I get that honestly. My grandmother got busted for bootlegging, so I guess it ran good in the family. My place was crazy. The Rolling Stones went there. I mean, and of course, that's how I met McLean and McLean, which is, of course, Glace Bay's famous comedians, and they were just great guys.
Yeah, so this bar was basically called Gary's, and it was on Queen Street West, right across from the legendary Horseshoe Tavern.
Absolutely.
Which may not have been as that legendary back in the 70s, but
it was.
Still,
it was still the country and western bar for the first couple of years, and then it changed to punk and so forth. But I got to meet all the stars, and most of them came to my bar. George Hamilton IV, and I even sat down a couple of days and had tea with Kitty Wells and Farron Young, all those guys, I met everybody.
And it's because they were, because Toronto basically would close down on 11, and this is the 70s. Toronto hasn't changed really much, too much since then. A lot of bars still close early, so you were, this was an after-hours club.
You couldn't do what I did.
Yeah.
Now, and again, I was in a business where most people lasted a month or two, and I lasted 5 years.
Yeah, exactly. So let's go back to McLean and McLean for a minute. Many of our listeners, especially our Glace Bay ones, will remember them. They were basically a notorious brothers, Gary and
Blair.
Gary and Blair. Both are deceased now,
yeah.
I believe. But they put out something like 7 albums, and their humor was, someone just called it as scatological humor. They talked a lot about toilets and bathrooms and bodily functions,
again,
but that was part of their
shtick.
They started
as a folk group called the Vicious Circle.
Okay,
and it got so they were telling jokes, and the next thing, they were telling more jokes than they were playing, and it sort of all evolved into that. I think the best thing to be said about them, filthy but funny.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, again, there's something about Cape Breton and our association with sailors and the sea and so forth, is that you notice people around here don't really take too much offense at swearing. It's just part of the thing. And what surprised me most, I think, about McLean and McLean was how many Cape Breton grandmothers were in the audience. I mean, and they loved them. Oh, they're nice boys. And they had that about them, is that, as you know, you could say they were dirty, they did all this sort of stuff. They just had that, oh, I don't know, the attitude. I mean, you know, like they were wide open, friendly, just like your neighborhood kids in a way.
Exactly. I remember seeing them at least once way back in the day, and it was like that. You were kind of like shocked. Did they really say that? But then again, you're thinking, well, they're really no different than the guys at the high school in grade 11 or whatever, and the mouths on some of those guys and what they're saying. And it's really all just in fun.
Well, what was really funny then is that I was best friends with Murray McLaughlin, and I used to make him come and listen to me sing once in a while. And he really didn't like the McLeans. He liked the McLeans, but he didn't really like their act. And I used to push him along. But anyway, back in the days when they used to have, you know, sets and sort of long periods in between, we're all sitting in the dressing room, and this is Murray and so forth, and I don't know how we started it, but we started singing show tunes. And I could just imagine the audience, anybody walking by the dressing room and seeing McLean and McLean and Murray McLaughlin, guitars, and we're all, Oklahoma, where the wind goes, you know, like, I mean, and again, they all had fantastic voices.
Right.
Even their father, by the way, I met McLean and McLean's father, too, who was a coal miner. And, oh, great voice. They could harmonize. They sang like, you know,
yeah,
nightingales.
Yeah, they were really, really cool guys. You, Murray McLaughlin, you're mentioning one of Murray McLaughlin's songs. Lady Luck, right?
Shooting. Yeah, boy, you did your research.
Oh, yeah, I did my research.
That's very good, yes.
I know that song, and then when I was talking with you before, I thought, isn't there something about shooting craps at Gary's bar?
It was really funny. Jim McCarthy, who was in a band called The Dirty Shames, and at the time he was married to actress Elizabeth Ashley. Now, he was a great friend of Murray and I. And Murray comes into my bar one night, Friday night, with Jimmy in tow, and he says, Jimmy's depressed and wants to play some craps. And I'm going, oh, okay, I guess, okay, go upstairs. I had a crap table from years before upstairs. So he went up to in my apartment above my bar, and I grabbed a bunch of money from behind the bar and went up. And Jimmy, no kidding, he made 7 straight passes. He took $500 off McLaughlin, $600 off of me. And so he was a lot happier when he left.
Right.
But that was hilarious.
So it was Lady Luck got him.
And Murray wrote the song about it because he was left with no money for the weekend.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's pretty cool stuff. There's some other stories. Paul Bradley, who played Joey from Going Down the Road, you have this story about how you talk him into going to a party?
Yes. Oh, fantastic. We went to see Going Down the Road at the premiere at the New Yorker Theater in Toronto.
This is the classic Cape Breton Road movie from the 70s.
It was
classic Canadian movie.
Classic Canadian movie.
That's right.
I mean, it was the first real Canadian movie to
yeah.
have that kind of impact. And anyway, I was living in a commune at that time. This would be, what, around 1969, I think, somewhere in there. And four of the girls and I, I was also going with one of the girls, we all went to see the movie. And we were just knocked out by it. We went to the Pilot Tavern afterwards. And as usual, the girls wanted to go home after a couple drinks, but I wanted to stay. And I couldn't believe it. In walks Paul Bradley from the movie. I guess, you know, he'd been to the premiere too. And somehow we started talking. And after a few drinks and this and that, I convinced him. It was my girlfriend's birthday that Friday night. And so I convinced him to come and play in character that he did in the movie.
Joey comes to the party.
Joey comes to the party. And he stayed for 3 days. And we were best friends ever since. I mean, it went on for years. And he was really a character. Great guy.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Did you see the sequel, Down the Road Again? It came out a few years ago?
Well, I was even a little bit more involved with it because it turned out Cale, who was the beautiful girl in the movie.
Yes.
She was also in the second movie and had a big part of that.
That's right.
Well, we were Skyping all the time. Well, we were really good friends. Again, another just wonderful girl. She did a movie on the Jews of Cape Breton.
Really?
Yeah, and very famous. Won awards for it. She was a Russian Jew, grew up in Cape Breton, and so forth, which I learned later.
Right.
And anyway, she was very involved in going down the road in both versions.
Yeah, you've, speaking about films, you've got an assistant producer credit on the film Double Negative.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, after I decided that I wanted out of the booze business, I phoned the producer for every day for 2 years and got the job as assistant producer. and it was an experience. I went on to write and produce and so forth like that, and so close and yet so far away. The movie business is tough. Double Negative, not a great movie, but it was certainly an eye-opener. And again, Michael Cera and I were really good friends.
He was the star of that. Yeah. That's interesting because it's based on a Ross McDonald book, The Three Roads, I know that book.
I read all of Ross McDonald's books. I couldn't believe it. And again, it was written by another good friend of mine, Tom Headley. And he wrote Flashdance.
Oh, okay. Right.
Okay, and when we came out of the movie, we saw it together. He said, I think there's still one word in there that's mine. But he made about, anybody in the movie business at that time took the money and ran.
Right.
You never took the points, you know.
Yeah.
He took the points, and I think he got $6 million or something like that.
Wow.
It was absolutely amazing because it was a big, big movie.
Yeah. Pretty cool. And Ross McDonald was a Canadian.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he was from Ontario. Yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah, but that Three Roads, that's interesting. I've never seen Double
book,
Negative, but I want to see that now.
Well, it doesn't work as a movie. It's one of those, you know.
Yeah.
Like
it's a very complicated book.
It's a very complicated book, and it works very well in the book.
Yeah. There's another actor that came into your bar once that I'm quite interested in hearing a bit about, Patrick McGoohan.
He didn't come into my bar.
He was in a bar that you were in.
In the 22, which was really at the Windsor Arms in Toronto. And that was my hangout for 10 or 15 years. And it was really the movie bar. And Bob, Bob was a really good writer. He was an editor of Maclean's magazine and so forth like that. And he had a steel trap mine. Well, I'd written a screenplay, and I wanted to give it to Bill Marshall, who was a big producer at that time, and it happened to be in his office, and Bill and him were friends, and so Bob took the script and read it, and so anyway, in he comes, and he said, I want to talk to you about your script. We go up to the piano bar, and he sits down, and he tore me apart. I mean, he remembered everything, every bad possible thing, and he said, you'll never be a writer, you're no good, you don't belong in the movie business, and all this. And at that moment, I looked back, and I saw Patrick McGoohan coming into the bar, and I said, oh, look, that's Patrick McGoohan. Bob said, see, now that's where you're wrong. He said, that's not Patrick McGoohan, you don't know anything. Well, we go sit down, and I look, and I said, that's Patrick. And I went over, and I said, excuse me, Mr. McGoohan. Oh, yes. I said, would you like to join us for a drink? And And I said, what are you doing these days? And he said, well, I'm doing the manly sort of thing, you know. He said, I try to write 2 poems every day and drink a bottle of scotch. And, of course, Bob had just shut up his mouth when we sat down. It was
that's a great
made
story.
Made me feel a lot better.
That's yeah. I love Patrick McGoohan, and especially from that show, The Prisoner, where he was brought to an – he was like an ex – secret agent or something brought to this island, and that's you can't escape from, right? It's like a little village.
He was there shooting Scanners, which
the David Cronenberg movie.
I used to pick up David Cronenberg's daughter from school with another friend of mine's daughter and take them home all the time. I met David a few times too. That's
I was in Toronto a couple of years ago, and there was a David Cronenberg retrospective of all his movies. It was at TIFF, and I'm a big fan, so I had to go. I went specifically for that weekend, and there were lectures and talks and showing films, and then at the last day, David Cronenberg gave a talk with his sister, who does all the costuming for many of the shows, and the musical guy who does the scores. And I tell you, I mean, if you know David Cronenberg movies, you think this is going to be one odd duck. But he was up there like in a cardigan sweater.
Oh, absolutely.
And he was
straight as an arrow.
Straight as an arrow. He was like everybody's favorite uncle. Right. It was nothing at all like things that he's done in his films.
At that time was Michael Ironside, and we were friends for 10 years, same time as McLaughlin. And, of course, he was one of the stars in Scanners.
Yes.
And he said, with Cronenberg, he said his famous line was, more blood, we need more blood.
Yeah. Well, it's terrific. You've done quite a bit, and there's a couple of other people I'd like to hear about. Leonard Cohen, the Leonard Cohen story.
Well, Leonard came to Toronto. An artist had done a series of pictures of all his songs that he had written to that time. So he came again to the Windsor Arms, where usually everybody came. Now, I had a really good friend, Leslie McDonald, who was a beautiful model, absolutely gorgeous. And anyway, she was a good friend of Leonard's, okay, and had talked about him quite often. So anyway, Leonard's sitting all by himself in the 22, having a drink, and I'm sitting at the bar, and I see him. And I have, what the heck? He's in my territory. I go, hey, Leonard, I'm a friend of Leslie. Oh, the beautiful Leslie, he says. Well, we just hit it off like that. And again, it was pretty funny. He said, look, you got to go to this opening with me. He said, I don't know anybody here. And this was after, by the way, a couple of days of us drinking and talking. Uh-huh. You know, it was later on in the week. And anyway, I'd had a great deal of trouble with my wife, and I hadn't been able to see my daughter for 5 years just after she was born. And she finally relented. And so I got my daughter and her sister, who wasn't my kid, the same night as the Cohen show. So Leonard said, I don't care. You got to come. I really need you to support me. And I said, but I got to take the kids. That's okay. You can take the kids. Well, you wouldn't believe it. You never saw a gallery open like these kids running around screaming. Somewhere there's videotape of Leonard with my daughter and her sister under each arm and a glass of wine in his hand. And just a fantastic time.
That's a great story. Great Leonard Cohen moment. I think I want to wrap it up with one more story about that connects John Allen Cameron and Daryl Sittler. You know that word?
Yes, well,
it's priceless, this one.
Yes, well, when I first opened my bar, John Allen was one of the first acts at the Horseshoe, and I'd met him there, and we became good friends. And through the years, we ran into each other all the time. And I had to move back to Uxbridge as my father died, you know, looking after business and so forth. And John Allen used to play the Highland Games there every year. So for about 3 years, we'd get together and have a few beers and talk about Cape Breton and so forth like that. Anyway, when I moved here, I ran into his brother, Alex, you know. And so Alex told me this great story is that with John Allen and all his brothers, and they were very competitive in so many ways. One of the brothers, John Allen, came home, and he said, look, he says, George, he says, got Daryl Sittler's autograph. Have you got it, John Allen? John Allen said, No, but he's got mine.
That is so cool.
Yes, it is.
That might be one of the best John Allen witticisms I've ever heard. No, but he's got mine. So we've been talking to Gary LeDrew here on the coast. It's interesting chat. Gary, he's an artist. He's been in the around.
You can come by and hear the unexpurgated edition anytime.
I was going to say, now where everybody knows, he's got the great little studio right downtown Charlotte Street. You should drop in, see the art, see some of the late Jay Redbird's art in there as well. Gary's got lots of other stories. He's also, you can find a lot of his art and his writings about his days in Toronto and other things on his website.
We didn't even mention the 3 months I spent drinking with Richard Burton. That's a book in itself.
There's a book in itself there. Yeah. And for our listeners, some of that's on his website as well. So the Richard Burton stuff.
Yeah, GaryLeDrew.com.
GaryLeDrew.com. Okay, Gary, thanks very much.
My pleasure, Paul.
And that's our show for today. For Dialogue, I'm Dave Wilson. Thanks for listening.
Catch Dialogue 3 times weekly, Sundays at noon, Tuesday and Thursday at 10 p.m. Dialogue is a production of the Coast 89.7 News. For story suggestions, contact 902-849-9303 or email news@coastalradio.ca. For past episodes of Dialogue, check out our Dialogue podcast, available now online at coastalradio.ca.